So some people might not realize that the Birding Life podcast is not the only podcast that the Birding Life has. We also have a youth birding podcast hosted by Joshua Winter and Gabby Sikora. So what we're going to do over the next few weeks, while we are on a season break from the Birding Life podcast, we're going to give you a taste of the youth birding podcast. We are going to select some episodes that we think are some of the best episodes they've done, although all the episodes they've done are fantastic. And we're going to give you a taste of what the youth birding podcast is all about. If you'd like to listen to more of the youth birding podcast, we'll put a link in the notes to the show.
Okay, hello everybody and welcome to this week's episode of the Birding Life Youth Podcast. I am Gabby Sikora, and in this episode, I am chatting to John Kinghorn. So welcome, John. It's great to have you.
Hi there, Gabby. It's great to be on your podcast. I've been following it with great interest since you guys took over. I think you guys are doing an amazing job.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Okay, well, John, are you ready? Let's get into this.
I am indeed ready. Let's go for it.
Awesome. So, John, I mean, it's no secret. You're a very interesting man. But I don't want to get into too much detail myself. So I'm going to leave it up to you to tell our listeners who you are, what you do, and everything in between.
I hope interesting is a good thing. I think it is. I think I'm very fortunate to have fallen in love with birds and wildlife for being in love with it for many years. I've grown up in a family that's always encouraged a love for nature, a love for wildlife, and an appreciation for conservation. And I think I started delving into the world of birds when I was about 12 years old. I was still obviously in prep school and ended up finding one of the bird guides in that from the library there, ended up taking that out, checking it out under my name, and off I went exploring. And I still remember I would spend the afternoons when I didn't have sports and that on, I would literally put my binoculars in my locker, and then everybody else went home on their off days, and there I went, grabbed my binoculars and started walking around the campus. So I was really, really lucky in that the school that I attended as well had incredible grounds and some amazing birds. I mean, I had some phenomenal sightings during my time spent at St. Stillian's College. And that's just created an amazing foundation for me to basically have birds form part of my day-to-day life right up until today. So yeah, it's taken me to some incredible places across the world. I've seen some amazing things which I wouldn't have seen had it not been for birds, had it not been for birding. And I'm very fortunate enough to call birding my profession at the moment. So yeah, it's been an incredible journey so far.
You obviously know Robin Phipps, you know her, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, she goes to Saints, and we went on a JHR camp and we were literally just sitting around the fire and we had a look at the bird list for Saints. And like we were taken aback. I mean, there's Finfoot there, seen there. There's like records of that. So yeah, we were quite taken aback to say the least.
No, the Saints, yeah, the grounds at Saints are incredible. And I mean, I still remember, I think my species list for Saints is probably close on the 300 mark. It really is incredible. And I remember one weekend, I literally spent the entire weekend just birding the campus. And I think I got like almost 120 different species for a piece of land, which is literally on the outskirts of Sandton, like almost in the middle of Sandton. It's incredible. I mean, I've had amazing things there. I've had Eurasian hobby and little bittern, and there's been Goliath here and there. There's been freckled nightjar, fiery neck nightjar. It's really, really there was a long crested eagle that was reported there the other day as well. So no, it's amazing. And especially being there for 13 years and then obviously being a birder for what, seven of those 13 years, which is just over half of my time there, it gives you the opportunity to see a whole host. I mean, I'm not exactly the physically adapted to swimming, but we were still forced to attend swimming galas. And I'll never forget the one swimming gala. We were sitting there, and the actual swimmers were busy doing their thing, and I literally was busy looking at a European honey buzzard flying above the pools. And I mean, it was madness. Yeah, no, it was madness. So no, it really was incredible. And like I said, it gave me a nice foundation. So I think my first 300 species on my Southern African life list were within the confines of saints to a large degree. And, you know, obviously once you reach a bit of a plateau, you then want to start exploring a bit more. And then that's what prompted me to start encouraging my family to travel a little bit further afield on the family holidays, and what then caused me to want to travel further afield as well. So no, it's incredible birding. Yeah, like you said, Robin can definitely attest to that fact as well, for sure.
Yeah, she can. Okay, so now you've just mentioned like traveling with your family and also yourself. So it's no secret that you've got quite the comprehensive list of destinations that you've traveled to. So what are some of them, and which of these have left the biggest mark?
Yo, Gabby, it's difficult to choose. So I was very lucky in that, obviously, as I wrapped up my matric year, there was one of the world's leading bird tour operators got into contact with me and basically asked me to come on board. And with that, and taking a gap year as well, soon after my high school journey came to an end, I was able to see some incredible things. And I was with that specific company for about 6 years. And then once I left that company, I then started my own little operation pre-COVID. And then further allowed myself opportunities to travel, you know, continue traveling abroad. But is an incredible journey. It's not over yet. It's an incredible journey. And I mean, yeah, the opportunities that I got given were phenomenal. On a global scale, I would probably say that some of my best birding and some of the most memorable birding experiences I ever had were from Indonesia, but specifically the island of West Papua. So obviously it's the same island, but obviously the Indonesian side is the western side. And that's known as Papua. And then obviously the eastern side of the island is known as Papua New Guinea. I unfortunately didn't go to that side. So I was based on the Indonesian side. And then specifically around one of the islands, which is just off the coast of Papua, called Waigeo, which forms part of the Raja Ampat archipelago. And that was some of the most incredible birding I have ever experienced in my life. It was phenomenal. You know, some of the species of birds of paradise that are showcased on BBC and you know, these David Attenborough documentaries, you know, it's actually such a surreal experience being able to sit there in the forests and you're busy looking at the exact same birds that these renowned ornithologists and naturalists have looked at for many, many years prior to you having even been a bird watcher. So it's phenomenal. And definitely Papua was one of those destinations which has left its mark on me, so much so that I ended up getting two tattoos on my wrist, solely inspired by Papua and the birding that I had there. So yeah, Papua was incredible and I can't wait to get back there. I really want to get back there. And I also want to try the eastern side of that island, Papua New Guinea. Birding aside, the destination is incredible. The countries are amazing themselves and the cultures are phenomenal. I definitely want to go and experience some of the cultures in Papua New Guinea. And I think that is what just helps make the entire experience just such an adventure. It's not just about the birds, although that's probably the main reason we go there, but it's a lot more than that. If I had to choose somewhere else, probably Antarctica. Antarctica/Marion Islands. So let's just label it the Southern Oceans. The Southern Oceans and my time spent on research vessels, on the Flocket Sea, the BirdLife South Africa Flocket Sea voyages as a guide. Those probably come in very, very close. I'll never forget the morning I woke up and we were in Antarctic waters, and it's literally pancake ice, borderline pack ice, and step outside onto the observation deck and we've got snow petrels just busy flying around the entire vessel. And I mean, that was just, oh, that was such an incredible experience. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And then you're literally trying to find these or keep track on these birds, of these birds through binoculars. And all you can see is this little black beak and little black eyes, because the rest of the bird is snow white. So, you know, when it's backdropped by the pancake ice, it's incredible. So, no, that probably then ranks as a close second. I think the Southern Oceans are phenomenal. I love the Southern Oceans. Every opportunity I can get to get down into the Southern Oceans, I think I will definitely jump at with my hands wide open. But Southeast Asia is, you know, obviously Southeast Asia being Indonesia inclusive, but Malaysia, Thailand, Borneo, all those places, those are all destinations I want to go back to. And that's because of the impact that West Papua, or Papua, should I say, made on me. It's phenomenal. It really is incredible.
Wow. Well, you're very lucky, to say the least. You're making me very jealous here. But I personally am not as well-traveled as you. But currently, my top of my list is definitely Pofuri in Kruger. But yeah, I'm sure when I travel to like some of the places you're saying, that that'll probably be top of my list. But you know, fingers crossed someday, hopefully I'll be able to go to Antarctica.
Yeah, we all start, if you have to speak to anybody who's a professional bird guide, we all have to start somewhere. And I think that's what makes it exciting. Not necessarily saying that you might want to become a professional bird guide, but at the end of the day, the whole beauty about it is that you and a lot of the listeners are still so young. I mean, remember, I started birding when I was 12. I'm now 29 this year. And, you know, in this time period now, which is what, almost 17 years, I've had the opportunity. It's not just things that have happened in the space of 2-3 years. It's been cumulatively over 17 years that I've managed to slowly but surely. I mean, for the first 7-8 years, I mean, when I left school and matriculated, I'd never been to Durban or Cape Town. So it was quite an experience for me when I ended up going to Cape Town for the first time in 2014, and to Durban for the first time in 2014. And you know, that was slowly but surely the beginning to everything. So yeah, with time, if you've got a passion, your passion's going to take you to places. Pursuing your passion, and so long as you stay true to wanting to chase your dreams and chase your passion, you will most certainly get to see all these incredible places. Bofuri is going to blow your mind. It's one of my, in a South African scene or sense, Bofuri and Puna Maria, that northern part of the Kruger National Park, is incredible. The avian diversity there is phenomenal. Stuff that you don't get in other parts of South Africa, mostly only in the Miombo woodlands in the adjacent Zimbabwe and Mozambique. Racket-tailed roller, Arnott's chats, pinnawing nightjars, southern aliotas, swipe-breasted cougar sharks. Those are all form part of a tantalizing list of specials from that area. And I love it. I absolutely love it. So I do not blame you, because Bofuri and Puna Maria were one of my must visits as well when I first started and I hadn't ventured further than the border of Gauteng for my birding little ventures. And I remember I was trying to convince my folks, listen, I know we go to Kruger, I know we go to Letaba and Tatara and Olifants, etc., etc., but you know, can we just go to Bofuri and Puna Maria? And then we got there eventually. It's incredible. You're gonna love it. I think everybody listening who has been there will agree. It's phenomenal birding. It really is something different.
Definitely. No, yeah. We went. I think 2 years ago, we went up to Bofuri. We're staying at Chingwetsi and Letaba, so it was quite cool. But we went there. We spent a good day there. Popped into Puna Maria. But next month we're going for, I think, 5 nights. We're celebrating my 16th. And you know, it was such a debate having a 16th birthday. But anyway, so going to have a birthday party or we're going to go away. Okay. And I said to my parents, please, 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 can we go away? So I actually convinced them. I managed to convince them. And yeah, so now we're heading to Punda for five nights. And I still need to see crested guinea fowl. So I'm hoping, because they're apparently in Punda camp. They like residence there.
Yes.
So I'm hoping to see them there. So fingers crossed.
I reckon you stand a good chance of getting them. They're quite common around the camp. So I think you'll finally be able to tick that one off of your list. That's awesome. And yeah, I mean, listen, when I turned 18, I had a similar decision to make. My folks also like, listen, what is the situation? I've never been a guy who parties all that hard and enjoys clubs and all that jazz. Not me. I would rather be in the bush and in nature. And I remember for my 18th birthday, it was a similar situation. My folks said to me, listen, what would you like to do? Do you want to have like a party? You want mates over, et cetera, et cetera. And I said to them, nope. Arrange to get me out of school for like 2 days and let's head to Kruger. So yeah, I remember they were coming up with all kinds of excuses to try and get me out of school for 2 days. And I think they somehow managed to achieve it, because off we went to Kruger for basically a long weekend and celebrated my 18th birthday there. So, yeah, it was amazing. So don't blame you for making that choice. That's a very, very nice way to celebrate 16.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have that problem of trying to get my parents to get me out of school. Thankfully, with being homeschooled, it comes with a few benefits. So, but on the topic of ages, John, at the age of 19, you achieved quite a milestone. So can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so I was, it's actually crazy to think that it was 10 years ago this year. It's quite mad. Yeah, so when I left school, well, towards the end of matric, I wasn't really sure what I was going to study. And I had a couple of ideas in my head, and I still applied to one or two places, universities, and got feedback from them as well. And I got accepted into different degrees at different universities. But I wasn't happy with making a decision at that stage. So I went through the entire application process and I just wasn't ready to commit to something because I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go in. All I knew is that I wanted to do something which would either be related to nature / conservation, or would give me a skill set which I would be able to use somehow with regards to conservation and nature later down the line. So I still came up with this concept. At the time, there was a couple who had just done a Southern African birding big year. And prior to them, there was another gentleman, a well-known birder, Neil Perrins, who'd also done a birding big year in 2011. And I'd read about this as I'd started my birding journey. And then, you know, as the time came towards the end of my trick, I was like, you know what, actually, I think I'm going to broach this topic with my parents and see what they say. And I went to them the one evening, and it was like a scheduled evening. We were going to sit down and decide upon my future. and I said to them, I'm like, you know what, I don't think varsity next year is going to be the best option. And they're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, no, how does the thought of me taking a gap year sound? And my folks were like, no, it's not happening. You're not taking a gap year. And, you know, very strict, very rigid about it. And then I said to them, like, no, just listen. And then I sat them down and I explained to them the situation. Like, this is my intention. Like, if I proceed to do this and I take an entire year to do a big year, it'll be an incredible opportunity. It will, you know, I'll have an opportunity to network, to establish a name for myself in the birding community. Birding has become a lot more than just a passion. It's something that I want to pursue going forward. So it could be really, really beneficial. And then eventually, after a couple of months, they ended up saying, okay, that's fine. You can take the year. We will sponsor you, but you need to approach other people, other corporates, companies, etc., to see how you could sponsor, you know, get sponsorship as well. And if you're going to do it, you need to do it big. So, you know, we encourage you to get into contact with people and entities who can help share your story, and you need an objective behind it. So what is your objective? And I said to them, well, if I do it and I end up recording over 800 species in a calendar year, then I would get the record for the youngest person to ever record 800 species in a calendar year. And I think at the time I would be only the sixth ever person to see 800 species of bird in Southern Africa in a calendar year. And they were like, okay, well, that sounds good enough. And then, you know, the last condition is obviously if birding is what you want to do going forward, and it might very well be a career path for you, then just make sure that you qualify as a nature guide, as a professional guide. So I was like, 100%. So I then abandoned all of my university applications and feedback that I'd received. And I then registered for my FGASA, then level one, which is now apprentice field guide. And started putting the plans into motion to take an entire year to travel Southern Africa, seeing how many species of birds I could find. And it was the most incredible experience of my life. It was absolutely phenomenal. Again, the places that I went to, the people that I met, the birds that I saw was just phenomenal. I mean, my life list, I think at the start of my big year, was only on like 524 species or 523, I think. And then at the end of my big year, at the end of 2014, I was on 810. So on my life list. So in the space of a year, I think I ended the year on 803 species. And then I think, yeah. And then there was the 18th of December in the Belated River Canyon, where I ended up getting number 800, which was an African finfoot. It was phenomenal. So, if I could do it again, I would, because it was just so much of such an incredible experience. I think what made the year that much more incredible was just the fact that a lot of the birds I saw were all lifers. It was one thing recording all these birds on a list, but actually seeing them as lifers for the first time was just phenomenal. Incredible. I look back to 2014 with fond memories. Like I said, I can't believe it was 10 years ago.
So what is your life list currently on now?
876 in Southern Africa, yeah. Yeah, so it's taken. So, yeah, like I said, I was on 810 at the end of, the start of effectively 2015. And, so between 2015 and now, so 9 years, I've gone up from 810 to 876, which has included some very, very drastic decision makings, some very last minute decision making, some ridiculous attempts at chasing birds, some dips, some success. It's been a very, very eventful 9 years. There was a period in the 9 years for about 2 years where I didn't do much twitching at all. I almost kind of took like a twitching sabbatical. And it just so happened that within that year there were so many things that turned up which are gonna absolutely haunt me going forward, because I flipped the chances of those things turning up any time probably in our lifetime is still good, but not anytime soon, I don't think. So but it's incredible. It's one thing chasing the birds and getting the numbers, but that's another thing being able to share it with people, with friends, with family, and I think to me it's kind of less the adrenaline rush and less the bird that I'm actually seeing, and more the experience, the sense of adventure that goes with it. I think that's really what makes it appealing for me. The bird's nice, it's all fine and well, but at the end of the day, like when I relay a story about me going on a twitch, it's very seldom about the bird. I'll explain to you what we went to go and find, But I'm actually telling you about how we went about doing it, what we had to go through, and the whole experience. And that to me is what really makes it special. So yeah, and it's been one hell of a ride.
Well, it sounds like it. Okay, well, I know there might not be many, but what are your target species, like your next upcoming ones?
So the last bird that I need in South Africa, that isn't a vagrant, is striped flufftail. So I've had it calling in front of me probably about 3 or 4 times, but because of whatever reason.
Yeah, me too. I'm just going to say quickly, flufftails and I don't get along. I'm just putting it out there.
No, we
don't have a good relationship.
No, your sentiments are shared. There's been times where I've literally just wanted to, I've like hurled a string of profanities at these birds when they don't show. Like, it's actually bad. Like, it should be an R-rated movie when these birds don't end up showing and I have to end up leaving the bird. But I've had them calling from my feet about 3 or 4 times, I think, cumulatively. And because of whatever reason, I've had to leave. I can't spend enough time there. The bird simply didn't show. We didn't want to stress it out too much. Whatever the case might be, I just still have not physically seen striped flufftail. So that's the last locally occurring bird that I still need. Everything else is a vagrant. And then in obviously the adjacent countries, Namibia, I need grey kestrel. I've been to northern Namibia, onto the border of Angola numerous times, and somehow have managed to find the more trickiest stuff like Angola cave chat and Cinderella waxbill, yet grey kestrel seems to have evaded me. So grey kestrel I still need, and then Mozambique and central Mozambique and the eastern highlands of some still have about cumulatively 8 to 10 birds there for me, which I still need. Everything from lesser seed cracker, African pitta, scarce swift, greater frigate bird, barred long-tailed cuckoo. There's a good couple of ones that I still need from central Mozambique. And then obviously some, mental pelagic stuff that might turn up here and there as well. So my Atlantic water stuff in the colder waters, I've got a nice total because of the time spent on the research vessels doing bird observations. So there's not much that I still need for Southern African waters from, obviously referring to the species that are preferring the colder Atlantic Ocean. But then if we go up into the Mozambican Channel and the warmer Indian Ocean waters, there's definitely quite a lot that I still need. So, I've done minimal time on pelagics out in the Indian Ocean. And I think I've probably done about 2 Durban pelagics, 3 Durban pelagics, nothing from Mozambique. And the potential for life is in the Mozambican Channel for me is high. So, I think on my own calculation, getting from 876 to about 890 with just cleaning up on stuff that I still need should be relatively easy. The last 10 to 900 is all about twitching. It's all about chasing those once-offs.
Well, that sounds like fun. In December last year, Luca and I had quite an experience with a flufftail, and we spent over 2 hours with this thing, and it was literally right in front of us.
Yes,
like it. Literally, it wasn't. Oh, it was like right by our feet in the reeds.
Yeah,
but it just gives me like PTSD to think about. But then a snake fell on my head, and then I was out of there. But that's a story for another day.
No, I had a similar experience the other day as well. It was with red-chested flufftails, and we were trying to also try to get visuals of it. And I saw it move across like this with a little flat patch twice, and then Aaron didn't see it. And then again, same situation. We were there for like almost an hour, and eventually time constraints meant that we had to leave. But I mean, it was just those birds. They're something else. They are really, really difficult to get visuals on. I mean, they're really cute and they're really awesome to see. But in the same breath, like if somebody comes to me, especially as a professional guide, and I can guarantee every single guide who operates and leads tours in areas where flufftails are occurring will share the same sentiments as I do, in that when they see the word flufftail or hear the word flufftail on a client's target list, it's like internally they have this not again type reaction because it is so difficult. But yeah, that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it even worthwhile once you actually find them and actually get visuals on them. It just makes it that much more rewarding.
No, exactly. And then a few days later, we went up to Prince's Grant for a couple of nights, and Luke and I went on this little walk, and literally the exact same thing happened. Literally. Right in front of us. But you know what? We'll get them someday. We'll get them.
Yeah, you'll get them. So you don't have any fluff tails on your list now, okay?
No.
You'll get it.
Not yet.
Was that red chest that you were busy listening
to? Sorry?
Was that red-chested fluff tail you guys were busy looking for?
Yes. So we're looking for red-chested, Umhlanga, and then a Prince's Grant, the striped, was calling right in front of us.
Oh, my soul.
Thanks, John. Well, we still have so much to talk about. So my suggestion is that we continue this chat in the next episode. So thanks for listening, everyone. Be sure to tune in again next week when John and I continue our conversation. For now, this is Gabby Sikora for the Birding Life Youth Podcast, signing out.